You are listening to the Novel Writing Podcast, episode 124. Grab a cup, cozy up, and let's get to writing. Today, I have Caleb Palmquist with me to talk about things that he's learned from running almost 20 Kickstarter campaigns, most of which have been successful. Caleb recently joined Haley over on her YouTube channel to talk about his most recent campaign and how he's evolved over the years of running Kickstarters. So definitely go watch that interview, and the link to that is in the description. So, Caleb, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Go ahead and share a little more about who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Caleb Palmquist. I am a comic book writer. I've been writing comics for about 8 years, I want to say. I'm always kind of guessing on the number, but I think it's about 8 years now. And I run Kickstarter. So I fund everything that I do through Kickstarter. And I actually have run almost 25 Kickstarters, if you include the ones that I've done on a couple other profiles and in collaboration with other people. And so, yeah, I have about 8 years of experience doing that, doing all sorts of different comic book projects, and I've had a few failures along the way, but yeah, that's who I am.
So when you say that you fund your like everything you do with Kickstarter, do you fund it before you even start the process, or do you fund it to like make back what you spent on the process?
That largely depends on the project, but usually what you're looking at is okay. So, for example, I have an issue of a comic book being funded right now. And what the funds will pay for is to print the book and then to pay for the art on the next issue. So, I've paid for the art on the first issue so that I can get it to people who back the project as quickly as possible. And that art is mostly complete at this point. And then the second issue will be the art will be paid for by the funds on this first one. So to answer your question, it's kind of to pay myself back, but everything kind of keeps rolling forward, you know. And that all hasn't always been possible. I haven't always been able to have things complete before the Kickstarter. I will say it's always preferable to do it that way. Everything runs smoother and you're less likely to run into issues. I can't tell you the number of times that I've talked to other creators who had a graphic novel that they funded on Kickstarter, but then they had to have the artist actually do it and the artist ended up bailing for whatever reason. And then that's a really rough position to be in, because then even if you find a different artist and complete it, you're not actually delivering to the backers what they pledged for. And so yeah. That was a very long-winded answer to your question, but I typically the money is to essentially pay myself back for the art, the money that I've invested to create the project, but then also to print it. I don't print anything until after the Kickstarter so that I can essentially print to demand.
Okay. I mean, I know that's what Haley does with hers. I just always was curious about when you see Kickstarter projects for books or comic books or whatever, you always see like these really pretty covers and you have all this art already. I'm like, how did they pay for that part? And what is the Kickstarter actually doing? But I love this idea that you can fund basically the next sec like the next installment, and then you I guess you would run a campaign to fund like the next cycle of that, right?
Yeah, so essentially it's like every new issue I'll do another Kickstarter and that money just keeps kind of getting pushed forward. And when you ask the question, where does the money come from? Well, early on that came from, maxing out credit cards and other foolish financial decisions. But I mean, if I were to give advice to someone who's kind of trying to get that cycle going to where they can be paying for stuff ahead of time, I would say, save up your money, be smart, don't put yourself in a risky financial position. But it is always going to be better to have a lot done ahead of time, especially with comics. I mean, if you're writing a novel, the art assets you need are relatively small, right? Like a cover, maybe some graphic design or something. But for a comic book, it's all art. And I have run campaigns where I didn't have a substantial preview done. And then I'm sort of just describe. I have concept art and I'm describing what's going to happen in the book, and it makes a big difference to have those preview pages and to be able to show people this is what the book is going to look like if you can pay for ahead of time. But again, I'm coming on 8 years of this, so that money has been rolling forward for a long time. Essentially, like this first issue was paid for by money that I got from funding a campaign last year on a different book, just sort of excess money that
Nice.
was from that, then gets funneled into a new project.
So there were a few things in your interview with Haley that really caught my attention, and I wanted to dig into them a little bit more. The first of those was how much you talked about your diehard loyal fans kind of being the first people to back projects, but also that your diehards can't be the only people you reach. So like your project has to connect with the right people. So how do you go about finding those right people beyond, I mean, well, I can guess just that base amount of loyal fans, but also people beyond that?
That's a really good question, and that's something that I think about all the time. I mean, one way that I reach people beyond that is doing things like we're doing right now, which is, going and putting myself out there, whether that's being a guest on other podcasts or doing, sometimes I do like live stream shows that people do on YouTube, or going to conventions is a big one. Which, obviously Haley has done a bajillion, way more than I have ever done. She probably has done more in a month than I've done ever. And just like any way you can kind of get the word out. I would also say, though, honestly, the number one way I spread the word is by being on Kickstarter. Like a lot of competitors to Kickstarter pop up and sort of like try to offer maybe a better user experience, but the thing about Kickstarter is it's where the people are. And I always get sort of natural discovery every time I launch a Kickstarter. And so, like, honestly, it's not a silver bullet, but the best thing that, in my experience, to do to get more eyes on your thing is to be on Kickstarter as often as possible. Now, I am not a novelist and I don't pretend to know the intricacies of like Amazon Kindle publishing or anything like that. But my understanding is the more you're on Kindle, like the more often you're publishing, the better your visibility is, which I know is like a double-edged sword because then you're like, do I want to be kicking out a novel every 8 weeks or whatever it is? But I would say that it's not as harsh on Kickstarter as I imagine it probably is on Amazon in terms of those algorithms. But the more often you're there, the more opportunities people have to find you. Because Kickstarter truly is a place where people go and they just browse in the categories that they're interested in, whether that's board games or music or novels or comic books. And they browse and they just look for stuff. And then they'll find your project. But if you're not on Kickstarter that month and they're browsing, they're not going to find you because you're not there. And so, short answer is any way I can. Trying to find new people. But the shorter answer is that the number one way is Kickstarter.
Okay. So it sounds like it's more about being consistent on Kickstarter as a platform. Like if you're going to use it for funding all of your books, fund it for use it for all of your books instead of being like, oh, I'm going to use it to fund like the cover art for book three, but then never touch it again. Because Haley has also had massive success with starting out with Secrets of the Tally all the way through the last book.
You want to keep coming back. And I mean, I think also people are creatures of habit. They like their particular, ways of interacting with content. Like if you're talking about books, for example, there are some people who will buy books at Barnes and Noble, and that's what they like to do. And they're not going to go to the library. And they're also not going to read a book on a Kindle, and they're not going to go on Kickstarter or whatever. And then there are other people who, like, they are specifically going to be on Kickstarter looking for new books. And I have found too, trying to get people to change platforms or change the way that they buy things is a very tough sell. That's a big reason why a lot of times people will have a webtoon and that's very popular, and then they'll try to launch a Kickstarter. And depending on how successful their webtoon is, they might still be successful, but it's the outliers that really are successful switching platforms like that. Because if you're asking a bunch of people who've been reading your webcomic for free for years to suddenly buy a hardcover edition, I mean, a lot of those people are just not going to do it. They've never backed a Kickstarter. They don't have a Kickstarter account. They're just not interested in that. And of course, I mean, there's like a certain amount of like, if you have big enough numbers, that's always, a certain percentage of them are gonna support you. So I think whatever platform you choose, just like being really consistent about it is important.
And it's not like you have to be on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and Twitter, or sorry, X, and like all of those social media platforms. You pick one, go all in. So with the selling portion, it's also like Kickstarter or Indiegogo or just whatever platform you're going to use. Don't bounce around between them.
Oh yeah, no, I wouldn't recommend bouncing between crowdfunding platforms because, it's like I said, a hard sell on that. And I considered it at one point doing like there's a platform called Zoop, which is a comic book crowdfunding platform that's relatively new. And there were some appealing things about it, but they just don't have an audience. I was invited to do a project there, and I just looked at all their projects, and they just weren't getting the kind of support that similar projects would get on Kickstarter because the people aren't there, and that really matters.
Another thing you talked about a lot with Haley was about failure, which is a necessary step of the learning process, but so many people are scared of it. What would be or what is your process for evaluating those failures?
Oh, sure. So I really do believe in carefully evaluating failures and successes. I mean, if something goes well or goes poorly, if you're not really examining why that was, then it's not really of use to you. And so when I have something that doesn't work, the last thing I want to do is be like, okay, I'm going to try to do pretty much the exact same thing as soon as I can, because that rarely works. And yeah, so I mean, my most recent failure, I had a Kickstarter in January. It was a new project, a new book, and it just wasn't hitting with the audience. And I really did a pretty deep dive postmortem on it afterward. And there were like a number of different problems with how I promoted it, how I presented it, and just like the concept itself not really being something that really jived with my audience. And also just like the way that I was evaluating what might work for my audience wasn't really working. But I was like, it was definitely a learning experience. And so I guess what I would say is, I take a look at what happened, and I try to figure out why it didn't work. And if I can't figure out why it didn't work, then I set it aside and I do something else. And I think about it, and then maybe later on I can come back to it. So I would say that's probably the most critical part of evaluating failure is that I don't immediately take action. I take notes and I think about it and I talk to people about it and then I put it on a shelf because I think that, right after we've failed, after we've had a failure, we kind of have failure brain can happen. Like if you get fired from your job, you might be panicking and like make crazy decisions like, oh, I have to sell my car now or something, and like usually those kind of decisions that we make when we're like stressed and panicked are not the best decisions. And so I would say that's kind of the biggest element of how I evaluate failure is I think about it, I take notes, and then I put it on a shelf and I let it sit for a while. And sometimes I come back to projects that weren't successful with a new angle and they end up being successful. So, it just kind of it needs that period of your brain kind of working on it and trying to decide what to do next without making rash decisions. I hopefully that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's don't make life altering decisions when you're highly emotional, and that
Yeah.
sounds like one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So, speaking of the Kickstarter that was a flop and then you kind of sort of repurposed it later. I mean, for a lot of authors, they'll hit a sticky point with their books and then those drafts end up kind of sentenced to life in prison without parole. So, like how do you go about with that evaluation process? Like planning out how to, I guess, like what's next from those learnings, and especially in the repurposing or rewriting kind of stage, how do you go from this project failed to I'm going to tweak it into something that can be successful?
Well, I mean, anytime that we create something that we're really passionate about, there are things that we love about it, right? I mean, even when you have that graveyard of manuscripts that never get published because you decided for whatever reason that it wasn't working, or maybe you tried to publish it and nobody bought it, there's things about it that you loved because you wouldn't spend all that time working on it if you weren't passionate about it. And if you did spend all that time working on it and you weren't passionate about it, then maybe rethink your life choices and kind of do something else with your time. But I had a project in 2019 that failed. It was my first comic book series. It was called A Small Favor. I was working on this It was like a big epic sci-fi story that it was like my first big project, and I had this idea that if I wrote 10 volumes, then I would finally be able to reveal the mysteries and everyone would be blown away by this big epic story. And it was my first thing. It wasn't selling very well, and it wasn't that well written. I was still really learning the medium. And the third Kickstarter for that campaign failed, and the first two really only funded because my friends and family came in to help me out. And so I put it away. And then a few years later, I had been thinking about the characters in it a lot. And I took what had been working from another project, which is sort of like high concept, catchy title with, sort of a fun mashup of ideas. And I applied the characters from that other previous project to this new project, which ended up becoming Vampire Detective in Space. Now, if you compare the titles of those, A Small Favor is a title that, I mean, I dare anyone who doesn't already know what it is to tell me what that book was about just based on the title. But I'm sure from the title Vampire Detective in Space, you at least have a clue of what's going on there.
It's a lot more informative.
And so my advice, I don't think, is to write titles that pitch themselves necessarily. It's something that I tend to do that I like doing, but it's more like that vampire book could have been about other characters. It could have been about other characters and other conflicts, but instead what I did was I took some of the characters from my other thing that I really liked and I just applied them to this new thing and gave them new life. And I think that's more about like if you have an idea that you like, I mean, don't ever throw it away. Don't pitch it in a bonfire, Like hold on to it. You never know. You never know when it might be useful, when you might get to give that thing new life.
I always tell authors never delete stuff, put it into like a cut scenes file. And what you're talking about with mashing things up, that's basically what happened with my first book was I took two manuscripts that I wrote when I was in like junior high school and I mashed them together. And that became the series that I'm working on right now.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, for sure. It's I think that, it's one it is an important skill to be able to, kill your babies, as they say. But also, sometimes those babies are, not so bad. They could be kept in, cryostasis or whatever until they're ready to be birthed into the world. I think my process just really involves patience. So much of, I mean, not only when analyzing failures, but also when writing in general. And I can't claim any expertise necessarily, but I would say that the cool things that I've come up with in writing comics have almost always come as a result of writing something down and then putting it away and letting it cook in my brain while I'm doing other things. And I think that cooking time is essential. If you tell me today, here's a pitch, this is about like a knight who rides a zebra. Okay, now I've got to come up with a script. I could bang out a script for you today, but then if I sat on it for a month and thought about it, I could give you a much better version in a month. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think that's true with failures too. I mean, you're not going to know exactly how to reapproach something immediately after failure. You're just not. I mean, maybe you're like a Rain Man genius that I'm not, and you have that ability, but certainly I can't do that.
So, talking a little bit more about the patience and the failure aspects, Kickstarter is a great platform for creators, but I also think it takes a certain kind of personality or mindset to use it successfully. I just get exhausted thinking about all the work that Haley has to do when she's running and fulfilling and like marketing her Kickstarter. So like my brain is just, no, I don't want to do this. What would you think are the personalities that Kickstarter is right for? Or I guess alternatively, if someone really wants to run a Kickstarter, what should they be prepared to experience?
Oh, sure. I mean, running Kickstarter can be grueling. I will say, like I said, I think I'm coming up on 25 of them, so it's like I'm very used to it, and it's less exhausting than it used to be, but that said, it's not less work than it used to be. I mean, in addition to just developing your project and having it ready to go, you also have to build a Kickstarter page and present your project well. It's not enough to just like show the cover and like a synopsis. I mean, you have to sell it on this page, and you have to become a salesman, and then you also have to promote it. There is discovery on Kickstarter, that is true. But if you're a creator who doesn't already have an existing audience, like a robust email list or anything like that, you have to figure out how to bring an audience to Kickstarter. If you can't just launch apropos of nothing and expect people to flock to your project, unless you have like some kind of licensing deal. If you got the Power Rangers license and you're doing the next Power Rangers book, then by all means, go ahead. But if you're, just a regular person and you're doing your book that you're passionate about, that you came up, your idea that you came up with, you're going to have to bring people to it. And that involves a lot of promotion and involves a lot of talking to people. I would definitely say that to be really successful on Kickstarter, to a certain degree, you do have to have some extrovert tendencies, or at least the ability to fake those tendencies long enough to get out there and push and do the work required. You're also talking about being essentially a one-person publishing company if you're self-publishing through Kickstarter, with everything that that comes along with. Now, hopefully you have support network around you, but it's mainly going to fall on you to promote it, to order everything afterward, to ship things out. Like you said, that's one of the most exhausting things, and Haley and I have talked about that a lot. Putting books in boxes and shipping them to people is a lot.
But even if you're not doing the fulfillment type stuff, it's still, you're doing it yourself no matter what if you're an indie publisher. Like you have to do the coordination with your artists, with your formatters, with your editors, with like all of that kind of stuff. And then you still have to do the part where you tell the world that your book exists.
That's true. Yes, it is. I mean, what I do is like a huge part of what I do is just like constantly maintaining conversations with like 50 different people at all times, to like to because I'll have three or four different comic book series running at once, and each one of those has an artist and a letterer, and then I'm talking to printers, and I'm talking to people who are helping me promote, and I'm talking to editors, and it's like, so I just am in constant communication with like a ton of people all the time, and who I have either I'm have financial deals with them, or just like creatively bouncing ideas or whatever it is. Do you have the bandwidth for that is kind of the question. Now, it doesn't have to be as extreme and as crazy as I am. I mean, like Haley did one a year kind of for a while, which is like maybe 1/6 of what I do. But and she had that. It's also a different thing with a novel. I mean, I think people generally don't expect, like, if they read a novel, they don't generally expect the next novel to come out before like a year.
Right, that's the general expectation. However, we would like them to be available immediately.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I do think that's why some people have so much success on like Kindle publishing, like every 4 or 8 weeks or whatever, because people can be insatiable in terms of what they want to read. But yeah, so if you're asking me to go back to the question, what kind of personality you need, what do you expect to do? I mean, you got to expect to do everything. You can't just put up a project and expect people to come to it, because it's just not how it works. And if you see people funding on day one and having like a ton of success, they built that. They
Yep.
did the step. I mean, there's a few exceptions. If you're Keanu Reeves and you're launching a Kickstarter, you're probably not having to do that much work. But then again, that's built off the back of, the career of a movie star. So maybe don't use that as a comparison point.
I was just thinking of Brandon Sanderson. Like, not everybody's gonna be putting up a Kickstarter and getting 42 million from it.
That's right. But, I mean, good on Brandon Sanderson for having built the kind of rabid fan base that can just
Yes.
summon up $42 million like that. So
Yeah.
there's been a lot of debate about whether or not Brandon Sanderson coming to Kickstarter was good for Kickstarter. And I generally fall on the side of I think it was good for Kickstarter. There are certainly a lot of feelings. Same thing happened when Keanu Reeves was on Kickstarter with a comic book. Was like, is that good for people? Is that taking attention away from small projects? I mean, I think the truth is that a lot of people created Kickstarter accounts to back Keanu's project or to back Brandon Sanderson's project. And now, how many of those people are going to continue to use Kickstarter? At least to me, it's like it just brought more people to the platform and more awareness of the platform, which I think can't be a bad thing. But I do understand the frustration of feeling like, oh, if you launched your novel in the same month that Brandon Sanderson launched his project, I
Yes.
mean, it's definitely drawing attention away from you. But then again, when he was had his Kickstarter live, he went through and backed every single Kickstarter that was every novel Kickstarter that was live at that time.
Whoa.
Yeah, he did a whole live stream about it. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome. I did not know he did that.
So and I think that was him being like, I understand I'm a huge celebrity and on this platform and there might be some anxiety about it, and I want you to know that I'm actually invested in the platform and I'm helping people out. And that was really nice.
Can you imagine the creators though who got a backing from Brandon Sanderson that are probably just like, ah! That's awesome. Semi-related question to all of this. How do you choose funding goals?
Oh, that's a great question. I used to choose funding goals based on how much money it would actually cost to do the thing, and I largely don't do that anymore. Part of that is from a position of privilege of having built up the audience that I have, is that I have a decent expectation of how much I'm going to make. And I also know that there's like a certain perception involved in backing on day or funding on day one. And so if I set the goal low enough, I can fund on day one and that looks good. But early on, really early on, I set goals based on what I thought I would be able to raise, even though it wasn't enough money. Because I was like willing to put forward X amount of my own money. And then as I grew on Kickstarter, I started setting the goals at what I actually needed. And that was okay. But as time went on, especially when I had projects that I felt like were sure fire, like sure bets, I would set the goal lower to fund earlier. Now, my official advice, I would say, for setting goals is that you need to understand, you need to do an analysis of where you're at financially. How much money can you afford to put forward? Like if your project funds, quote unquote, but you like it's not enough money to cover everything, then you still need to deliver that project, right? Like if you met your official funding goal, you're committed to delivering that project. And so it's what's your risk tolerance, right? If you need $6,000 to get this novel printed and pay that artist that did your awesome cover and whatever else, and you set the goal at $3,000, do you have an extra $3,000 to cover the difference? If you do and you're willing to take that risk, then go for it, set the lower goal. If you don't have that money, then don't set that goal, set the higher goal. And I mean, you know, the other thing is got to take into account, I always do the math on how much I need before I set a goal or before I launch Kickstarter. And some of those things are Kickstarter takes 10%. That's 5% to Kickstarter and have a rough 5% for credit card fees. Then you also have to account for drop backers, which always happens. There's always, because the way Kickstarter works is you're pledging, and then at the end of the campaign, they charge the cards. If your card was good when you pledged, but then when they actually go to charge the card's not good anymore, then it doesn't work. And then backers have a week to fix it, but they don't always do that. And so usually I have to account for anywhere from 3 to 5% of pledges just being dropped. And nobody does that maliciously. It's just something that happens. And sometimes people are like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I just got a new card or my card got stolen or whatever. And I want it back. I want to pick it up later. And, you know, like there's lots of different things that can happen there. But essentially, between all that stuff, you really got to say 15% of what I actually raise is going to be gone just to like fees and then drop backers. And then you got to look at things like printing, any art fees that you have, any other fees you have to finish producing the project. And then you got to think about little things that you don't necessarily account for, like if you're doing extra things like printing stickers or prints or bookmarks or whatever, like how much is that going to cost? And a lot of times people do stretch goals and they don't think about like really how much those are going to cost to produce and send to people. And that can cut into your bottom line. And then of course there's shipping. I charge shipping exclusively post campaign now on I use BackerKit, and that is somewhat controversial, but it's more and more creators are going in that direction, and I really believe in it because it keeps things more straightforward in terms of I'm separating this, that's like clearly money for shipping, and I can also charge by weight and I give people a more accurate shipping charge on BackerKit. But some people don't like it. Some people think it feels dirty in some way because they're having to pay twice, once when the project ends and then another time for shipping. I mean, to me, it's no different than if I charge shipping during the campaign. You're paying the same amount of money, but you know, your mileage may vary on that. I think that the tide is shifting toward that being more acceptable on board game Kickstarters. That's always been the case. They've always charged shipping after the campaign. But anyway, So that's just another thing to factor. If you're going to charge shipping on Kickstarter, you got to think about that in terms of your goal. Because one of the major reasons I don't do it and I wanted to start charging shipping separately is because on Kickstarter, they just add the shipping charges that you charge to your total amount that you raised. So if you're trying to do the math on like how much money do I need, the shipping can really mess that up because how do you predict how many international backers you have versus domestic backers versus digital only backers? And so then, and to ship one comic book, if I was to ship it to Ohio and it's one comic book, it's going to be about $6. But if I ship that same book to Australia, it's going to be $35. So, you know, definitely.
I once shipped one of my books to Canada, and US media mail for like one of my books is like $4, and to ship it to Canada was 22.
It's wild. So that's just something you have to consider. But yeah, to circle back around to your question, how do I decide my funding goal? At this point, I estimate how much I need, and then I set the goal significantly lower, like basically with the expectation that I will far exceed it. And it's a little bit of like theater, I guess, to spill all the secrets here, but it's a little bit of theater. If I can say, look, I was 300% funded. You know, that's exciting for people who are supporting the project, and it seems very successful. And they are successful, but you know, that giving that, it's like if you do your bar graph or the right way, it looks more impressive, right?
Creative accounting.
Yes, that's right.
Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
You know, I don't know. I think the main thing that's like sort of interest to me in talking to you and talking to Haley is like the difference between comics and novels. And Haley is one of the only people that I personally know who has done novels on Kickstarter. And I honestly think that the Brandon Sanderson thing is super salient because I think prior to Brandon Sanderson coming on to Kickstarter, novels on Kickstarter were a really tough sell. Like there's a publishing part of Kickstarter, but honestly, I think Haley was in like the upper like 5% of performers
Wow.
on novels in Kickstarter. And then Brandon Sanderson comes along and raises has like the most successful Kickstarter of all time. And it's a novel Kickstarter, which fiction on just regular novels, fiction on Kickstarter was not a high performing category prior to that. And so I think that there's like really some exciting possibilities opening up on Kickstarter for fiction. Just, you know, comics has always been one of the highest success rate categories on Kickstarter, but novels less so. You know, I think that's really exciting. And it's funny because I think Haley kind of feels like she's kind of done with Kickstarter. Like she doesn't want to go back to Kickstarter. Whereas I'm almost thinking like, man, if I ever finally get myself to write a novel, which is a very scary, daunting thing, it's a whole other conversation. I've done run like 25, like I've done so many graphic novels, and I'm like the thought of writing a novel just terrifies me to my bones.
We can help you with that.
And well, maybe I'll take you up on that. But if I ever do, honestly, to me, it's like I would just go to Kickstarter because I think that that space is really opening up for that kind of thing. And I think it's fresh enough and new enough that you're not really getting like corporate interest in there yet. Something that you will notice about Kickstarter is if you look at any given section, there's always a point at which the companies start to come in. So with board games, that was like 10 years ago. And now, if you want, I mean, I've never designed or sold a board game, but if you wanted to do a board game, like an independent board game on Kickstarter, you're going to be up against, at any given time, you're going to be up against big companies, like major companies who are running Kickstarters for their board games.
Wow.
And so the competition is steep because, of course, you can't, if you're just in someone designing a board game in your spare room or your garage or whatever, you don't have the resources that these major companies have. And comics are starting to be that same way. Right now, there are three major comic book publishing companies that have Kickstarters running. Whether that's good or bad, right or wrong, I don't know. I'm not really willing to make a stance on that, but it does change the environment. It raises the bar, which ultimately I think for creative work, raising the bar is always good, but it makes it much harder for people like you and me with limited resources to compete. And so you have to keep raising that bar. And right now, novels have not, that hasn't happened to, I mean, some people might argue that Brandon Sanderson represents that, but you don't see like Random House running a Kickstarter. And Brandon Sanderson's books that he put were, they were self-published. I mean, I know he has his own
Right.
publishing imprint and everything, but that's him. That's his. He owns that. I think, honestly, if you're writing novels, I think now is the like a great time to be on Kickstarter. You know, that is that saying that you are sort of eschewing traditional publishing if you're going to go on to Kickstarter. And I know a lot of people have big dreams about being traditionally published and they don't want to consider self-publishing. But if you are, if you have decided to investigate self-publishing, I mean, I do think Kickstarter is a really valid option for that. Especially if you're interested in fancier editions
Oh,
and
yeah.
making more money from fewer people.
But it doesn't have to be like, I'm gonna get these, not to, you keep using Haley as an example, but I'm gonna make my covers have all these shiny embossed letters and all that kind of stuff. You can still do it for ebooks. Like you could
Oh,
slap
yeah,
ebooks on there. You don't
100%.
have to do anything where you're actually shipping product.
No, that's true. And that people do comic books, digital comic books on Kickstarter. Like they do digital only campaigns. I mean, those tend to earn less, but that's mainly just because people pay less for a digital product than they do for a
Right.
physical product. And so your average like pledge per backer is going to be lower. But, you know, people have done quite successful digital comics on Kickstarter. And, you know, I would just say whatever platform you choose, you know, being consistent is so important. Like if you're like, I'm going to do Kindle and I'm going to put all my resources into that and figuring out that ecosystem, which to me is like the surface of Mars, but to some people I think they understand it, you know, then go all in on that and invest yourself in understanding that platform. And if you're going to do Kickstarter, like really invest yourself in understanding that platform. But that said, I do think it's like totally a viable way to go for getting novels out into the world. And that's definitely, I'm interested to see more and more people do that. And like I said, maybe someday that'll be me.
Well, it's good to hear that that seems like Kickstarter is becoming more appealing to novelists. That's good to hear. As we kind of wrap up, where would be the best place for listeners to connect with you and learn more about your comic books?
Sure. So if you go to calebquist.com, that will take you to my website. And that's where you can learn about all the books that I've written and also follow my newsletter if you want to keep up to date on kind of what I'm doing. I would say you could find me on social media if you search my name, Caleb Palmquist, but I'm not active on social media. So that might not be helpful to you. And then my two most popular comics are called Unicorn Vampire Hunter and Dragon Grit. And if you just Google those or go to unicornvampirehunter.com, it'll take you to the same place. You'll find all my stuff.
We'll put
That's
all of
it.
that in the description.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really fun talking with you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the first draft is supposed to be garbage. The Novel Writing Podcast is a production of Tally Inc. To find out more about our writing resources, including the 60-day novel writing challenge, check out the links in the description.